Hi, I'm Susan Clark.
And I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
Welcome to the Beauty of Conflict podcast. Have you ever wanted to take some of what you've learned on the podcast to the next level? Well, check out our new step-by-step, easy-to-use team kit to get your team from avoiding conflict to discovering the beauty in conflict.
To learn more, go to www.thriveinc.com/team-kit. That's www.thriveinc.com/team-kit. Hi, I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
And I'm Susan Clark.
And today our guest is Nancy Smith. Nancy Smith, Esquire, is an attorney licensed to practice in Vermont and New York. She is the chair of the Collaborative Divorce Section of the Vermont Bar Association, a leader in her collaborative divorce practice group, and a member of the International Academy of Collaborative Professionals. There's a common theme there, collaborative. She frequently writes and talks about divorce, family law, ethics, and collaborative divorce practices. She believes that a good divorce is possible when you show up for it with humility, compassion, and the correct support. Nancy is the author of Untangling Your Marriage, A Guide to Collaborative Divorce. Welcome.
Yes.
We're so excited to have you, Nancy.
Sure.
Thank you so much. I am excited to be here.
Yeah. Now, this is a kind of a unique focus of collaborative divorce because divorce has such a stigma of like, war.
Divisive.
Yeah. So tell us more about it and how you got interested in these collaborative practices.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thank you so much. So I've been a divorce lawyer for over 30 years. And when I was young, 25 or so, and I became a lawyer, I had very concrete ideas of what I thought it meant to be a lawyer. And I, of course, didn't expect to be a family lawyer. I didn't grow up to be a divorce lawyer. I thought I was going to do something fantastic with international human rights or something big and important. And I ended up in Vermont, which is a small state. And this is where I came to go to law school. But as time went on, I found that helping people through the major life transformation that divorce presents is a real opportunity to have some impact, a positive impact on individual lives. So I started to readjust my attitude about myself and my grandiose thoughts of how I was going to, you know, change the world, and just decided to work with what I've got and where I am. And over time, that led me to a day in particular that I do recall being in court, being in a massive battle, somebody calling me a name. It's very common to call lawyers like very aggressive animals, right? This lady called me a barracuda. And at the time I thought, oh, I sort of took some pride in it, even though as I'm older now reflecting back, I think that's not actually a compliment. And then people, but you know, you might want a white knight or a gladiator or piranha or a pit bull or something aggressive, an aggressive animal. So I started thinking about that and I'm like, that was not a very satisfying experience. And then literally that day in the email box came a note about collaborative practice from a colleague across the country. And I'm like, oh, that sounds so refreshing.
Yes.
Right. So I just did a deep dive and learned about what it was and realized that there were a lot of other people, lawyers, mental health professionals, and financial planners that were coming together under an umbrella group called the International Academy of Collaborative Professionals, and that I could get training in it and I could start a new way of looking at the practice of family law.
I love it. And just for our listeners, I think you were naming what makes up a team, right? Of a collaborative practice. You have the financial, the mental health, the lawyer. Who else am I missing? Am I missing somebody else?
That's it. Just the three of us.
The three main buckets.
Yeah.
And in this international community, it's not like you're always working with this. Do you work with the same financial people and the same
therapists,
mental health people, or do people just pull their specific people that come to you? A little bit more about how that works.
Sure. So the beauty of a collaborative model is that it's being practiced in every state in the country. So every state has groups of lawyers, mental health professionals, and financial neutrals that come together, usually in a thing called a practice group, which is good for camaraderie building and trust building, because the professionals who are helping a couple get divorced, they need to trust each other. And in the adversarial model that we were describing before, where we're all kind of aggressively identified by some animal, a moniker that maybe we embrace or we don't. It's a different mindset and it's a different process. So every state has different laws for getting divorced, how to get divorced. And every state has lawyers, mental health professionals, and financial neutrals who are practicing right now, collaborative divorce. So for anyone listening who's curious about it, all they really need to do is Google collaborative divorce near me and something's going to show up, most likely a statewide group or several groups of people who just like to work with each other and kind of we self-refer within our groups, our practice groups.
Now, I mean, I will say what I appreciated, I think I got introduced to collaborative divorce in a different segment. It was a guy, he may have been the person you mentioned that started it a lot in California, I think. Was he out of California? And I can't remember the book or how it, I don't remember exactly. But what I really appreciated how it has come even further. And in your book, I thought, actually does a good job of talking about how to figure out, is this the best path for you or not? And gives some pretty good tips, not just, I'm assuming people will be already at that point of divorce, but some of the things you say in there, we find could actually help a couple really decide, do they want to get to divorce? Because there's some pretty practical things about how to have conversations and to consider conflict differently than just, okay, this is the end. And I think, you know, that's a part of even the collaborative divorce process. I imagine sometimes do people ever end up not divorcing?
For sure, Susan. So really good points. I wonder if you were thinking about Stu Webb, who wrote a book back in like 30 years ago. He's from Minnesota. And then from Minnesota, it went to Pauline Tesler and her folks in California, Northern California. And they're the ones who expanded and added in the financial neutral and the mental health coach. And right. That just blew open the doors because as a lawyer, we're asked to wear all three of those hats, and it's a lot to manage, and it's very expensive for the client. And we're not necessarily, the lawyer is not the most efficient one to be processing all your deep emotions and or going through all your tax returns.
I actually loved one of your comments in the book, like, yes, you don't need to have a counselor, and you're going to be paying me a lot more money to do this if okay. So I don't know if it's you that said that, but it was a quote.
Okay. So then to your point, though, about like the ambiguity and the ambivalence, people have a lot of ambivalence about what to do with themselves and their relationships when they feel like either they're not being heard or communication has broken down to the point where maybe contempt has maybe set in. That's usually a sign that it's too late. But the ambivalence is very common. And oftentimes we might even send people to a discernment counselor. Have you got discernment counseling? It's a deep dive before you end up getting divorced. And then the discernment counselors, it's a niche area. It also came out of Minnesota. But it's really to do a deep dive on the individuals and the couple to determine whether or not the relationship is salvageable or whether it needs to move on to a separation. And if it's going to be a separation, then those folks are super well suited to be collaborative because they've already done all their work and the anger is not so high and they can both come to recognize psychologically that it's time to separate and it's going to be good for both of us. Oftentimes that's not the case. People come at various degrees of readiness. So the person in my experience who maybe wants it done yesterday, they've probably been thinking about it for about a year.
Yeah.
In my experience, it takes about a year to get the courage up to even call a divorce lawyer or even say the word divorce. Like it's so hard. It's so hard. And because I think like from your work, you know, people are just conflict avoiding. I mean, and we just are.
Yes. I mean, what you're describing as a discernment counselor or coach reminds me of our book is The Beauty of Conflict and program is The Beauty of Conflict for Couples. So it does actually, usually it's, we actually encourage people to do it as at the beginning of their relationship if they can, because it's going to sure help them not get to the end. But, you know, that idea of helping people have these hard conversations, because conflict is one of those things that...
Well, it's going to come up in your most primary relationship. All your buttons are going to be pushed, mostly in your primary relationship.
Yes. And I would imagine even on your teams and between lawyers, we've done a lot of work with law lawyers. We have a friend who brings us in to work with his lawyers. This is up in Canada. And because they are actually conflict averse as well, but it just shows up. It can look like no way is this group of people conflict averse. But sure enough, you know, even aggressive signs are often an underlying just defensive mechanism when somebody doesn't feel safe or comfortable talking about differences. So that makes a lot of sense. The different stages
of readiness, right?
Yeah.
And so I do appreciate that because I myself learned that I was conflict avoidant. I'm like, that can't be true because I was so full of like vim and vigor. And I just wanted to go out there and, you know, go to court. And I didn't understand really that that was just sort of overcompensating for some other stuff.
Yes. We often had Nancy that you recognize that.
We often are working with executives and it's, oh no, we're good at conflict. I can fight with anyone. And it's fighting is not actually healthy conflict in any way, shape, or form. That's not actually, you know, that's,
I know.
That's like, not a good sign.
Like, how are your listening skills? How are those coming along?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or, you know, so,
for sure.
Taking different perspectives.
Yeah.
Another piece that I was quite struck when we were reading your information is just about the cost of divorce on businesses.
Yeah.
Can you say a little bit? Because I think that would, people of course think, oh, I'm going to lose my house or whatever personally, but you have information about how it impacts the environment those people are working in.
Yes. Yes. Well, there's very little actual empirical research that's done on this topic, which I really wish maybe sometimes I think in another life, if I were a scientist or a social scientist, I would do the research, but I'll leave it to others. Maybe somebody who's listening is a social scientist.
Right.
But yes, the impact on American business, a woman out of Nashville who used to be a collaborative professional, financial neutral, did some research and did some basic extrapolations about the cost to American business for just one employee who's making like $65,000 a year or something. But the loss to the company is like much, much more than just the base salary because there's presenteeism, right? You show up, but you're not focused. Divorce is such an emotionally driven process for the most part. Like I tell clients, it's 10% legal, 10% financial, you know, 80% emotional. And
yeah,
if you don't work through the deep emotional impact that a divorce is having on you, recognizing that you may feel rejected and you do not want to underestimate the impact of rejection on the human spirit. Yeah. It is big. And so if you're feeling rejected, or even if you're feeling guilty because you're the one who's asking for the divorce, and then you show up at work, and then you've got all this pressure because you're worried about your house and your children and your relationships and where you're going to go for the holidays and all, you're processing all of these losses and the loss of the dream of what you thought you were building that you're not anymore, that's coming crashing down. Like that is heavy stuff. And if you then go to work and it doesn't matter how competent you are, what your status is in the company, you are not going to be present. This is going to be distracting. So if you're worried on top of all of that about the cost of litigation and going to court and having to miss work because of court dates, because the court doesn't wait for anybody, you just have to show up when they tell you to. And you could be showing up and waiting. And then maybe your day doesn't even come because maybe they got backed up. Wow. So they got to get rescheduled. So you just took a half a day off or an entire day off. And now you're going to be missing work for that. It has an impact on your teammates and your colleagues, because if you're not present, somebody else is picking up the slack. It can generate just sort of a morose work environment. People are, you know, it's depressing and they don't want to necessarily hear about it. You may not have a safe place to talk about it. And you might be feeling isolated and alone. And we know that Americans struggle with this even more post-pandemic, but we are in an epidemic of loneliness. So if you're getting divorced and you're feeling lonely at work, it's going to have an impact on your mental health and it's going to have an impact on your performance. So all of that costs companies money.
And I'm sure, I think you talked about this in the book, you know, we have this idea that marriage is, we do a lot of things to support marriages, but half of them are divorce anyway. I think even the statistics, I was surprised. I thought it was higher than that even. And yet we don't have, it's kind of like divorce is like the word conflict. People have a very bad association with what it means, they don't think about it as something that is actually a loss, grief, all sorts of things, you know.
Like something to be attended to.
Not just completed.
Or, survived.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. White knuckled, right? So
right.
That's true. I do say that we have a lot of time and energy and money in the industry of marriage is huge, but there are very few good divorce rituals. And the only one you really have is like going to court. And that just sounds so frightening and awful for everyone, because I would think that a lot of your audience are the type of people who are thinking, who can at least believe that you get out of life what you put into it to a certain extent. And if you go into an adversarial divorce process, it is likely you and your spouse are going to emerge adversaries. Like you will not be friendly. You will not be going to each other's homes for the future. You might not even be able to sit next to each other at your kids', you know, recital, which is a terrible disservice to the children. And you may not be even mindful of what the impact is on your adult children, who now are thinking, holy smoke, was my entire childhood just a farce? Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then I was, this is going to happen to me. Everyone's afraid that divorce is contagious. It's just, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Wow.
It's a lot to ask the family. And so I think as leaders of your own life, you can take this as an opportunity for your own personal growth and development. And even if your spouse isn't sort of where you are at emotionally or however you see yourself in the world, you have a choice as an individual. How are you going to show up for your divorce? And I think that the collaborative model is well suited to people who have a little bit of insight, who are willing to like look at their own stuff, who've had some therapy, who can recognize sort of the limits of their own ability to communicate and express themselves. That's why you have a team. That's why you have lawyers to support you, to be there to explain, you know, what the law is and making sure that no one's going to get screwed over. But the lawyers are not there to make a difficult situation worse, which I can see happening sometimes.
I really appreciated in your book the whole idea that a big piece and even figuring out whether collaborative divorce is going to be good for you or not. But the first thing you talked about is get out of the blame game and take kind of ownership in any situation. You play a part. I mean, and we talk about, that's a big thing we talk about on teams, in businesses and stuff. Get out of the blame game.
Because trying to find the one person that caused it versus we all participated in
and
this.
We have a system that is set up to find blame.
Well, even in the courts,
in the culture and the way we do things, it's okay. Somebody is to blame for this happening. Even the pandemic, did China start, you know, we like to go to blame for everything. And so of course in a relationship though, it's okay. There are two people engaged no matter what. And you could either be a victim to whatever's happened to you or at least own, how did I participate? You know, and I think that point you were making, if you can be the type of person who's willing to look at it through the lens of, how did I participate and how could I learn from this, is going to be a lot different than if you stay in that. Okay.
Yeah. Fighting. I got to defend.
Yeah, defend.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That defensiveness and fighting, and it keeps you in that conflict loop. And it's hard to, you know, we say that you can't be creative and curious at the same time that you're being defensive. So if you're trying to defend yourself and justify yourself, then when you're not listening well, and you're not asking the curious questions, and because you think you understand, right? And so the confirmatory bias comes in, and everything that your partner does, you're like, oh, yep, I know why they're doing that. And you've got all this certainty, which is really not even true. And then you've lost your sense of curiosity where you could actually sit down with your partner and say, all right, I just heard this. Is that what you intended, or what did you intend? And just kind of break it down when you're not feeling so triggered, and then your nervous system is so activated, and then you're going to do the typical, you know, responses, fight, freeze, flee, right? Or paralysis and do nothing. And then that's what happens a lot of times too, where people are just so avoidant that they don't even want to have the conversation. But it takes courage.
Yeah.
I am curious, in the business setting, what we often hear when people, we're trying to encourage people to be vulnerable and curious in a conflict situation, is the sense of there's going to be retribution. You know, I'm going to get fired. Something's going to happen. And I can imagine going through a divorce, because I used to practice marriage and family therapy, then I would see kids and families, but I would often be told, you're going to have to come into court and report this. And it was sort of, I would always be on the back seat, like, how can I help you guys have an honest conversation? Because somebody's going to ask me to report this in a court of law. And how do you deal with that in the collaborative process? Because I imagine it comes up.
Yes. So one of the cornerstones of a collaborative model is that it's private, it's confidential. Nothing that's said there is going to ever be used in court. The lawyers can't be subpoenaed. Our notes can't be subpoenaed. The mental health coach who's there to normalize all the intense emotions, they can't be called to court. And the financial neutral can't be either.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. You got to set the tone for an authentic, honest, radically honest conversation to be able to get your needs met. And I feel like once you know that you're not going to get screwed over, that's like one of the main benefits. Like, you can just relax for a minute, because the idea of starting a divorce process when somebody files for the complaint, as soon as you get the court involved, somebody's going to get reactive and defensive and scared, and then they're going to lawyer up, and everybody's now looking for the big shark in town, and then you're kind of off to the races, and it's going to be very difficult to repair your relationship when you're in an adversarial model. Not every lawyer who practices adversarial divorces, you know, is going to keep you all in your separate corners, but it's very common. It's much more common to keep you in your separate corners and just wait until your full day of mediation, which might show up about a week or so before your final hearing. And then people are very motivated to get divorced and settle if they know that their final hearing is coming up in a couple of weeks. But, you know, roughly 2% of cases fail in the regular model and probably in about the collaborative as well. If you've got the type of personality that you cannot accept responsibility and can't listen and don't want to resolve it, then there are always going to be those kind of people that are super stuck and rigid. And those people are going to go to court and they're going to get a decision and they don't care what the decision is, really. It doesn't matter. The fight is what's important to them. But in a model that's our model, like the collaborative model, what's important is that you're heard. What's important is that you take the time to feel psychologically safe and ready to recognize that this is going to be a process and a mindset. And we're not going to solve all your problems. And you may not be best friends, but you're going to have at least done your divorce with some degree of grace and dignity that you can look back on and say, we did a nice job. That was not easy, but we did a good job. And then we demonstrate for our children how to handle conflict and adversity. And that's a gift. That's a gift.
Huge gift. Yeah.
And in that process, do you bring the children into it at times?
Well, we have a special person who can come in. They kind of parachute into a case. They're called the child specialist. And so they are also PhD level or master level child psychologist people. And they can come in and give guidance to the team and they can bring in the voice of the children into the process and or even adult children too. But yes, but they're not like in the adversarial process, we would bring in a forensic PhD psychologist.
Yeah, so I know. I've had those come and talk to me before. Yes.
That's a whole different ball of wax. And so, you know, that's definitely looking to cast blame. Like, why are the children misbehaving or what's happening? It's like, because somebody is bad or somebody's got some psychopathology that can't be, you know, is not consistent with decent parenting. So, or there's abuse or there's something really serious happening, in which case the court is a fine place to deal with like very complex psychopathology. But for the everyday garden variety people who are just wounded and sad because their long-term relationship is ending, we can create a different type of process that will allow you to emerge healthy and wholehearted instead of bitter and resentful.
And I think that so much of this to me overlaps into what can happen in business, because there's in business, we work in a lot of different organizations and there's the HR. I think there's collaborative HR businesses and their adversarial HR positions.
Where they have to be right, wrong, rule following.
And it's very tricky. You know, some of the same things come up because they're often the policy people are the ones who are going to you go to when you think something's been done wrong or versus, boy, we've worked with HR where it's much more like, no, we're here to actually get these two people that are at each other to talk together or these different groups of people to understand each other. But it sounds there's a lot of the same dynamics because it's relational and relationships.
And there's also in corporate, there's power dynamics.
Yeah.
But that also comes up in couples. You're like, who has the power? Yeah. And, oh, I've got the power.
I've made the money and I have, you know, it's my money that's in that savings account versus, well, wait a minute. Yeah. What? Yeah. I can imagine the same sort of dynamics come into play. Yeah.
There really are. And that's why I love the work that you're doing at the corporate level, engaging in sort of deconstructing conflict and teaching some skills about how to listen and hear where each other is coming from and building relationships, because you have to work together. You don't want to be firing people. You don't want to have, you know, because everybody has conflict, interpersonal conflict. And we don't have to all like each other and we don't all have to even be on the same page about things, but we do have to be respectful. We have to be civil. We have to learn to listen better and we have to learn to get along. And that's just basic stuff. And I think the power dynamic at a office is can definitely translate down to the power dynamic in a family. And it's not just who earns the money, you know, raises your children. Like people have identities. And I think that's one of the things that also gets shifted very dramatically in a divorce is who you think you were may not be who you are and or who you're going to be, because you're going to have to struggle with that identity question. Because if you've been historically the primary wage earner, but you actually don't want to miss your children's upbringing and you may want to shift down and do something where that allows you more time with your children. And if you've been the primary caregiver, and you're like, I don't want to give that up. And that's like, well, you might have to. Like, you might need to get a job if you can't afford your lifestyle. And, you know, even though that wasn't your bargain, that's not what you guys, you know, what the couple may have agreed to it when they started. Things shift and relationships change. And because we live so long now, you know, in the old days when you only, you know, when you died when you were 30 or whatever, 35, like a 7-year marriage is no big deal. But when you're looking at, you know, 15, 20, 25, yeah. 30, you know, that's a long time to be with one person. And if your communication skills are not up to par, you're going to have some struggles and you're going to feel lonely, even in your relationship. And
sure,
I don't, for some reason, loneliness keeps coming up for me today. I just feel like it's a psychological factor, I think, in marriages and maybe even in the workplace too.
Oh my gosh. People feel so isolated and who can I tell? I can't tell anybody I feel this way. And that's why it's so important to build a team like you have done with your collaborative team, where people can show up real and say, I am having a hard time for whatever reason today. And be honest about that and feel supported, not
that you have to dive into the deep details of someone's divorce, but the fact that someone could even come to work and say, this is what's going on for me. I don't really want the support you can give me is to just give me a chance every once in a while to, I may be a little more teary. I can still do my job, or so that that's talked about. Yeah. Out there, not just ignored.
And even HR getting educated in what collaborative divorce is, that will allow the worker to show up not so stressed out. And so anything you can do to alleviate some of the stress of a person who's going through a divorce is really useful. And I just want to circle back to Susan, your comment about the retribution fear of saying the truth and then worrying about how it's going to be used against you somehow. In the collaborative model, what I really love, and sometimes I say to clients, I'm like, first, you may not really know what you want or who you are, because you got to have to take some time to figure that out. Because when you're in a dyad and you've got your responsibilities, work, children, blah, 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 you sometimes lose focus on who you are and who you like, what's actually important to you. So we do allow time for setting some goals and figuring out who are you at the stage and what do you need? And the fear that is historic and sometimes in marriages is that you don't want to say something because you don't want to end up divorced. And so, of course, the irony is that we are getting divorced and that is reality. So now you should feel free to say whatever you need to in a respectful way.
Right.
Yeah. We say the same thing. Like, you're leaving, you're quitting the job. Why not be as honest as you've been wanting to be
because
for three years or whatever? Yeah. You've got nothing to lose at this point.
Exactly. But
people still hold back on that.
And I think, I don't know, in couples, and I think this is true in business, probably one of the hardest things for people to get, because a lot of times when that has gone on so long where you haven't said what you need to say, there's a huge amount of resentment. And that, and I always tell people, resentment is always a sign that you haven't taken care of your own boundaries. It's really got nothing to do with the other person. And as long as you keep making it about the other person, you're actually not, you're giving them a tremendous amount of power. Mm-hmm. And until can come back and say, well, wait a minute, how have I not been taking care of myself? And that's it. That's, we say that a lot with our business clients, and I'm sure it comes up in this process because people tend to want to say, but it's not me. I didn't.
Oh, they do. I've recently had to tell a client, you may not start a sentence using your spouse's name. Like you can't start a sentence with the other person. Like you can't be pointing your finger at somebody else. There's like three pointing back at you. So I tell them that all the time.
Yes.
And whatever you're upset about your spouse, it's mostly, you need to look at yourself. Like, where is that reflecting something in you that you need to work on? Exactly. And that resentment and the expectation and the idea that you think somebody else is going to solve the problem or that they are the problem, that's a very common dynamic. And we work through that just by being honest and authentic and being just humans, good humans. Even though I'm a lawyer and I'm not trained like you are in all the leadership and the deep psychology, I've seen a lot. I've been doing this for 30 years. I try to be a reasonable learner, lifelong learner about humanity and just being a person. And it's not easy, but especially when you're getting divorced, because you want to lash out and you want to blame and you don't want to accept responsibility. So those are big sort of adult development concepts that people need to kind of come to through their process while they're grieving all these losses. So it's not easy.
No. I have to say that you just triggered one of the things I remember seeing in the book. It was a quote about humanity, like something about, but in a divorce, you see you're dealing with humanity at its worst.
Yes.
Do you remember the quote? Can you?
Yeah.
I thought that was a very powerful quote.
That literally came to me from a student bartender at Vermont Law School when I was there, when I was, 1989, when I showed up first year. He said, criminal law is dealing with the worst of humanity, and family law is dealing with humanity at its worst.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And
as a youngster, I thought, that can't be true. And then, of course, 5 years into it, I'm like, oh, I think it might be like people are not behaving well. They're just behaving terribly and they don't even realize it. And I think it's just because they're so wounded and they do not realize that this is truly a grieving process before it's a legal process. And I just feel like that's where the disconnect is with the culture and society and the system of a family court to be resolving these most important, intimate, personal, relational dynamics that have such a big impact on the next generation and on a community and on the world at large. So I feel like sometimes, even though I wanted to do international peace work, I think this is my contribution.
Yes,
it's not a small contribution, Nancy, really.
I have a good friends of mine who are very involved in climate change and the environmental stuff. And I've always feel a little badly because I'm not as up to speed as probably I should be. But I always think, my commitment is to help clean up conversations and compost one
conversation
at a time. And so I think that can be a huge contribution. So I think you're doing a huge contribution, probably a very important one, because the other won't work if they're not the people that are doing the grassroots of one divorce and make that better. You make the world better.
That's why I keep showing up every day. And to your point also about how often first marriages end in divorce. Yes, statistically, it's around 50%. And that's held true for a long time. But second marriages, sadly, are almost 3/4. So those second marriages end in divorce. So you really do want to do your work the first time so that you can be ready for your next relationship. You can learn from the mistakes of your first one. Be a better partner, be a better parent, be a better step parent, be just better worker. Do your life in a better way once you realize that you're not perfect and that your spouse wasn't to blame for ruining your life.
Okay, I have to comment on the one guy you brought up, some guy that walked into your office who was sort of arrogant, said, "I'm the smartest person you'll ever meet on the planet," or something that. And I can't remember your response back, but it was...
Well, tell us your response back.
I just think that's a...
Remember that. I'm like, that can't be true because you're sitting on the other side of my desk with a restraining order against you. So you cannot be the smartest person I've ever met.
I love that. I bet you he wanted to hire you then because it was like you were frank and honest with him. And that takes,
I mean, that brings up a good question. Who is collaborative divorce good for? Okay. And who, I know, but I want her to share it for our listeners.
Sure. Okay. So I think collaborative divorce is for anybody who's contemplating, how am I going to end this relationship? And so whether you're just thinking about it and you're in that 1 year thinking period, or whether you've already announced that you want to end the marriage, I think it's really, sometimes your spouse doesn't want to hear anything you say once you use the D word. So it may or may not be worth it to explain to them, look, I've been to a divorce lawyer. It's a collaborative divorce lawyer. It's a different model and it's a different mindset. And even though I love you and we're going to be effective co-parents into the future, we cannot live together and this is not working for me anymore. So I'd like you to consider, if you can hear anything, like having a consultation with a collaborative divorce lawyer before you call your defense lawyer that's going to just try to protect you from something, which is really just the pain, which the lawyer can't protect you from the pain of a divorce. And I feel like sometimes that's where people get a little misguided. They don't even know what they need to.
I really think that's a good point, Nancy, that's really probably why we armor up and try to, because I'm trying to protect from, I don't actually want to feel this huge amount of grief and rejection and shame or whatever, because I couldn't make it work, all those different feelings.
And
you don't want to underestimate the amount of like family of origin stuff that a divorce will trigger, because that rejection triggers it, the attachment issues, the abandonment issues, like all that stuff. And if you are not versed in the psychology of that, if you haven't been to therapy yet, getting a divorce is a perfect time to start therapy, because you will at least have somebody to talk to other than your friends, because they're going to get tired of your narrative, because we all bring a narrative to the divorce. Yeah. And part of the collaborative model is being willing to shift that narrative away from the shame and blame game and more into acceptance and appreciation for the life that you did create, the children that you did create. It all wasn't terrible. And, you know, these are folks who, in front of, you know, the God of their understanding and all their friends and family, said this was going to be forever. And now it's not. And so you feel ashamed about that. And nobody likes to break a promise. And there's a lot of pressure to stay together in the culture, even though half of them end in divorce anyway. So it just really is an opportunity to take control over what you can, which is really, how are you going to show up for your divorce?
Yes. Yourself. Yes. Well, Nancy, this is delightful. I hadn't heard of collaborative divorce, so I love it. And I think it's a really good resource, both for HR people to know, but just everyday couples. How can people get your book, find out more about you, and for our listeners?
Thanks. So you can always go to my website, nancysmithlaw.com, and it's Nancy with an I. And then the book is available on Amazon, Untangling Your Marriage, A Guide to Collaborative Divorce. And, you know, anybody can send me an email and I'm happy to do consultations, and then I can help them find lawyers in their community if they can't find somebody on their own. So I'm happy to be here for a referral source.
Excellent.
Our second largest group of people is in Canada. Do they have similar things up there?
They do. I love the Canadians, which is why when you first mentioned them, I'm like, that would be that you're working with a law firm. I'm like, really? In the United States? I thought that.
It's Canada.
But yes, they're actually in Toronto. We're having the 24th annual International Academy of Collaborative Professional meeting, and it's going to be in Toronto. So yeah, robust collaborative community all across Canada. Great practitioners up there as well. And in Italy, England, Israel, France, in Europe, Brazil. So yeah, it's really kind of everywhere where people are interested in how to manage conflict effectively.
Yeah. Wow. And to think about it, it's 10% legal, it's 10% financial, 80% emotional.
And as we say, when you're under stress, you're at least 10 to 15 points lower in your IQ, no matter what it was. So imagine, put that, you know.
Yeah. And I have to say too, when you said you can either be curious or creative or defensive, you can't be both. We say you can either be relational or you can be right. You can't be both. Like that whole, that's the same idea. You are delightful. Go ahead.
I tell clients, you know, I'd rather be happy than right.
I can understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks a lot.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Susan here. As a coach, a lot of my time is spent helping clients speak up in a direct and honest way in their relationships at home and at work. Chris Marie and I decided to create a speak up kit to help you do that for yourself. It's the best of our best work that we've gathered to help you. To learn more, go to thriveinc.com/speak up. That's www.thriveinc.com/speak up.